Linoleum knife of splendor.
And it's nice to be back.
Did you go somewhere?
Yes.
Wait, my mic is... Oh, my mic is
no,
fine.
Your
my
mic is fine. Your headphones are not
here
on.
We are.
And you never know the difference between those two things. This is a podcast of the cinema.
It is. And you're Alonzo Durelli, who is the film reviews editor of The Wrap. It's a .com.
Gah.
And
sorry,
you're saying gah at your own description?
No.
Are you repulsed by yourself?
No. I was touching my own connection on my headphones.
Your headphones are way up high now.
And I got this that went through my headphones, so sorry about that.
Are you hearing yourself at a normal volume right now?
I'm good now,
because you're jacked up way high on the
I know that. These are new headphones.
They
I'm trying to figure them out.
They gave them to you on your plane.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but
that's a whole story.
It's a whole story.
Unto itself. We'll get to that. You're Dave White, film critic for You're Dave White who hasn't turned
Dave
his
White,
phone off.
Dave White who can recall his past lives. Dave White whose cake is ready to come out of the oven for just a moment. Why don't you pause while I do that?
I'll do that.
Yeah.
We don't have our act together. Ice cream and cakey cake. Ice cream and cakey cake. Ice cream and cake. Do the ice cream and cake.
There's no ice cream.
I know there's no ice cream.
We're back.
I can dream.
We had to pause a little bit, and I need to reset my timer because a toothpick inserted into the center of the cake
came up damp.
Came up covered in batter.
Mm.
Therefore, I'm setting my timer for 10 more minutes, and y'all are going to hear the same noise in about 10 minutes. And then
Great.
We may or may not pause while I go check out that cake.
In the business, we call this a tease.
And I'm in the middle of making a cornmeal blueberry cake. Blueberry cornmeal cake. It's a recipe from the Huckleberry Cookbook.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never made it before, but we have friends coming over this afternoon to hang out and help you dye Easter eggs, which is your favorite Easter thing to do.
Yes.
You atheist. And which will be relevant to the conversation about miracles from heaven. And then, so I thought, I could go out and get, you know, a bunch of stuff. Like, I had this big idea yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, I'm going to be lazy tomorrow morning. I'm not going to bake anything for anybody. I know they're coming over, but I'm not going to bake anything. I'm going to go to Magnolia Bakery, and I'm going to get some things.
Right.
Because it's like a 5-10 minute drive away.
Yeah.
But then I woke up this morning, and I thought, you're stupid, because that costs money, and it's cheaper to make something.
Huh.
And more important than anything else, even more important than my friend's happiness, is my cheapskate wallet. Yeah. Also,
your cheapskate-itude.
My need to guinea pig them on things that I bake for the first time so they can tell me if it's good or not.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
What do you want for nothing?
That's what's happening. So you're going to hear that noise.
Yes.
Whatever. You've heard other noises on this show
now,
that didn't have anything to do with the
indeed,
films
yes.
being discussed.
Now, if you're one of the couple dozen people who tuned in for our Facebook Live video chat segment this morning...
We're sorry.
You saw that cake being made while I was boiling eggs.
No, you didn't see any of the cake being made. You saw a page from the cookbook.
Well, that counts.
We need a better plan.
Okay, again, that was strictly an experiment.
It sure was.
I had mentioned on our LKTV episode, which our Patreon subscribers get, that we would give it a shot on Sunday morning while we were setting up to do this podcast.
Yes.
And do it for a few minutes, which we did. A couple people asked some questions and made some comments or whatever, and then we were out. And now we know how it works.
We sure
now
do.
Now we have done
now
it.
Now we know it barely works.
Yes, but better to have done that in front of a few people than to have gotten a ton of people in to do something we'd never done before.
Mostly I'm mortified that on camera, that the camera actually picked up the half-stripped cabinet fronts.
Well,
that I don't want anyone seeing.
It's a work in progress.
Because they sure are. They're like half torn up, half not. You know.
Next time, maybe we won't shoot in the kitchen.
Maybe we won't.
We'll do a room that you feel more completed.
Every room in this house has a problem that
yes,
I need
well,
to fix.
Well, yeah. This is a 17-year work in progress, this apartment. You're always repainting or re-spackling or something.
Something needs upgrading or upkeeping or repairing.
Yes.
All the time.
Yes.
I mean, if and we lived in one of those new kind of apartment complexes, I'd be on the horn to the maintenance people all the time going, hey, get over here and blah, blah, blah. But this is an old apartment.
Right.
And our landlady just had a baby. And I don't want to bother her.
Sure.
And I never want to bother her because she's nice. She likes us. And
yeah.
I like to, and also, I just like doing stuff on my own. I don't like people bothering me or helping me.
Okay.
That's what I'm doing. Yeah. So we have, all right, you've got the new headphones from South by Southwest.
Yes.
They just gave them to you.
Well, South by Southwest didn't.
You were a big fancy juror.
Yes, but these were not.
A juror.
These were not, I was a rural juror. These were not a gift from South by Southwest. These were a gift from Delta Airlines.
That's stupid.
So here's where this whole thing starts. All right.
The only thing they've ever given you.
Yeah.
Besides a nightmare.
I Ubered to the airport and I get out at LAX and I see people on the sidewalk wearing t-shirts that say Festival Shuttle. And I'm thinking, well, I'm going to a festival, but I know nothing about this and I'm sure I'm not fancy enough to be qualifying for whatever this la-di-da thing is.
Of course.
So I check my bag, I go through security, I get to the gate, and across from the gate at one of the restaurants at the airport, they have taken over the whole thing, and there's like a big brunch for the Festival Shuttle, and I'm still thinking, well, that's not me. So I walk down the hall, I go, you know, there's a little miniature Monsieur Marcel in the Delta terminal at LAX?
I only know about it because you posted about it either on Twitter or Facebook
yeah.
About what a nut disaster it is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Unlike the real Monsieur Marcel, where they have it, they keep it tight. They have it. There's this whole section that's like a fake. It's like a fake farmer's market. So they have that ice cream place. I think Bennett's. They have a little.
Bennett's has an LAX.
There's a little Bennett's. There's a little Monsieur Marcel.
Are they making the ice cream right there?
No.
Where's it coming from?
Probably they make it at the farmer's market. And they truck it out to LAX. Ugh. It's like when you go to City Walk when they first opened City Walk. Remember, when their idea was they were going to have the taste of Los Angeles, and they had a Versailles there, and they had an In-N-Out, and then they all closed because the tourists didn't care.
I don't remember any of that.
At the top of that big escalator.
When did City Walk open?
Oh, well, it originally opened back in the day. Like it was open back when Robert and I first moved out here in 92 or 93.
I understand.
But even in the time that you've lived here, there was a moment where they were trying to be like, if this is your one place in Los Angeles, like if you're staying at our hotel and you're going to our theme park, we're going to bring LA stuff to you.
That's a good idea for those people.
Yeah, in theory, but it didn't work because the tourists didn't want to know anything about stuff they didn't already know. They wanted to eat at, you know, Burger King or whatever.
Right, yes.
But they had a Versailles, which is a Cuban restaurant here. There's like a chain of them. They had In-N-Out Burger. They had several different, like, very LA kind of places. So the same deal with the airport. You get this little taste of
They should put a Roscoe's out there.
There you go. You get this taste of the farmer's market in the Delta terminal at LAX, which makes no sense because if you're in the terminal, you're leaving.
Yes.
It means you've already either live in LA or have already been there.
Right.
So anyway, I got a crappy quiche at the fake Monsieur Marcel that was cold in the middle and they gave me the wrong kind. And then when I go to board, I find out, oh, no, I'm on the Festival Shuttle. South by Southwest had booked my air tickets for me because I was a juror this year.
Yes.
I knew none of this. So it wasn't until I set foot on the plane that I realized that I was part of this action. Every seat on the plane had a gift bag. And I'm not talking like a little crappy, you know, paper bag with... I'm painting a picture for the listeners. I know you know. You've seen it.
I forgot we were having a conversation in front of...
For other people, yes.
A few dozen other folks.
So, yeah, this is not... It was not like a little crappy... You know,
see how it is? I just get lost in your in your words.
It's not like a, not
you
like
captivate
a,
me daily.
Not like a little crappy paper bag with the handles and like you know the usual junk in it. These were like Le Sport sacks. Like this is a bag I will use again with this pair of headphones that I'm wearing. Like the schmancy, the kind that are made of wood or have the wooden paneling on the side or whatever.
Fake wooden veneer paneling on the outside.
They claim it's real. It had I got a year's worth a year subscription via tablet to Fast Company or some magazine that I never read and never will. Right. You know there were toiletries in there. There was all these flavors of almond butter. These sample packets.
I'm glad you brought those home because I like the almond butter. It's nice.
I'd be curious to try out the different flavors. But maybe we could do like a flight of almond butters.
No, no, no. I said I like the almond butters.
You're going to share those
you
with me.
You don't get to have
yes,
anything.
Wrong. Anyway, so it was very fancy schmancy. There was a printed out like heavy stock card welcoming you to the flight. Apparently they had done this before for Sundance in January. Now they're doing it again for South by Southwest. And, you know, they actually referred to it as a curated travel experience. Which is just bleh.
I'm not gonna react.
It's a small batch farm to table.
Here's why I'm not gonna react to that. I don't hear that word anymore. Outside of the context of a museum.
Right. Curated means nothing.
I don't want to hear I simply don't. I do not hear that word anymore. If people say it, I bleep over it, and I think, I don't have to listen to
your
this person
your curated
talk.
Spotify channel and your curated, like, board of charcuterie. No, yeah. I don't want to hear about it. But there was free Wi-Fi, so that was great. And there was free booze. And I never drink on flights, but it was free booze.
What booze did you booze?
Well, I asked them what they had, and they started rattling down this whole list. And they had little... Woo! For those of you keeping time at home, they had the little Jack Daniel's honey.
I'll be right back.
Which, you know, is my... because I'm too much of a wuss to drink straight up scotch when I should be in a manly way. Although I can pull it off occasionally. But I like that Jack Daniel's honey. As our friend Brian said, it tastes like Christmas all year round.
I tried it that time he brought a bottle of it over, and it's too sweet.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you like a smoky tea, and now it turns out you like a smoky, like, scotch or whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever tastes like burning leaves. Dave White is down for that.
That's what I like.
But also, this flight was, and I don't know how they marketed it, but it seemed that everybody else on the flight was a 30-ish development executive, and they were all standing in the aisles the entire time, schmoozing and chatting and networking. Thankfully, our dear friend Gary gave me a set of noise-canceling headphones for Christmas. I'm lousy with headphones now. So put those babies on, flick the switch. I did not hear any of this. So I just tuned out, had my free snacks and liquor and Wi-Fi, and I was all good. Oh, that's gorgeous. you gotta take a picture of that and put it on the Facebook page. So, yeah, so that was my curated travel experience, but I get to Austin, and I got there the day that Obama arrived to give his keynote speech. So apparently, hours earlier, the whole city had just been insane in terms of blocked streets and not being able to get places, but luckily, by the time I landed, he was already speaking, and things had calmed down, and... I was able to get out of there pretty quickly. I saw I don't know if you saw the picture that they posted from the Austin airport of the double rainbow over Air Force One. But I didn't see Air Force One, but I did see the double rainbow as I was heading into town because it had just rained because it was Texas and they have weather and that's always exciting. I even got to see lightning shoot from cloud to cloud, which is
a
thing I really miss.
Until I get back to the mic,
kind of, yes. That's what's happening now. So anyway, so I get there and, you know, the downside of my arrival was that I did not have time to take a shower after getting off the flight. So I had to basically drop my luggage at the hotel, scoot over to the convention center, pick up my credentials, and bam.
And musk up the place.
Go to my first screening, looking like a fright, to meet my fellow jurors.
Great.
Lindsay Barr from the Associated Press and Richard Brody from The New Yorker. And they were great. And we had a great time. We watched 10 movies and judged them. And talked a lot about movies in our downtime because, you know, it's us. What are you going to do? And I was admittedly a little intimidated to meet Richard Brody. He writes for The New Yorker. He's written a book about...
I'm a big fan of that guy.
He's written a book about Godard. He's the stuff.
I read him all the time, and I've been mostly unaware of his more sort of outlying opinions on certain films, but... Mm-hmm. But in general, you know, he speaks my language. I'm into what he's about in terms of what he likes. It's kind of like I put him in the same camp as I put Manola, who is my queen.
Yes.
If she or Brody, if they don't like a film, that doesn't mean I won't like it.
Right.
I might still like it. But if they do like a film, then most of the time, I'm going to be behind them.
I think that the deeper you dig into Brody's opinions about current film, you may find that's not always true. Because he and I had a lot of conversations that ended with one of us looking at the other one and going, huh.
Anyway.
Because he's got some interesting opinions.
I'm a big fan, and
he will tell you
I've been reading him for years.
He will tell you how great Norbit is all I'm
saying.
So
when I knew you were going to be on the jury with him, I was like, oh, lucky you. I would dig to have been on that jury. And
you guys would have hit it off. I hope he comes to Los Angeles one of these days. Because he's a big jazz fan. And was like, he went to Waterloo in Austin and bought a lot of CDs. And I said, you have to come to Los Angeles and come to Amoeba.
Yeah.
And then come on our podcast.
Right. Yeah.
But he was great. He was super, super nice and very generous with his time. And we talked and talked and talked and talked. And Lindsay was great, too. And I kind of, like, Lindsay's one of those people that I knew who she was and would see her at screenings occasionally, but we never actually engaged in conversation.
And she does not live here.
She does live here.
She does live
here. Yeah, remember she was at the airport
with
me?
She was at the airport.
Keep up.
Listen. I had a lot of things on my mind when I picked you up. I don't remember. I didn't have anything on my mind.
So we saw 10 films. We were the narrative jury in Austin. We picked a movie called The Arbalest, from an Atlanta-based filmmaker named Matt Pinney.
Yes.
And it has been a somewhat controversial choice. People are not digging that movie necessarily as much as we did. But, you know, as Brody wrote in The New Yorker, our choice has spurred some controversy. Good.
Here's a controversial...
Do you want to hear about any other films that I liked, or are we just moving on? I can give a real quick South by Southwest recap. These are all movies we're going to talk about eventually.
60 seconds, when they go. Pop.
Okay. I quite liked Miss Stevens, starring Lily Rabe as a high school English teacher who gets dragooned into taking three kids to a weekend drama competition.
Right.
As somebody who used to be a high school debater, I think it really nails that weird dynamic of smart kids in a hotel room with a bunch of other kids over the weekend and the stuff that happens. But also an interesting character study of this 29-year-old teacher and her own stuff. She got Best Actress. We gave her Best Actress, rather. We gave Best Actor to Andre Royo from The Wire and from Empire and a bunch of other stuff for a film called Hunter Gatherer that I thought was a really interesting kind of character study.
Yeah.
There was a good film called Astray about a Somali refugee living in Minneapolis who went...
Minneapolis!
Thank you. Who takes in a stray dog. and is sort of an outsider within his Muslim community there. I should have had all this written down.
Yeah, you
should
have.
the only movie I really actively kind of did... Oh, Transpacos is a cool little thriller. It won the Audience Award. I actively did not care for The Other Half, which is a movie starring Tom Cullen from Weekend and Downton Abbey and Tatiana Maslany, who is apparently his actual girlfriend. She's on Orphan Black.
Yeah,
she was young Helen Mirren in The Woman in Gold.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I have read so many great books about autobiographies of people talking about their bipolar disorder. Most recently, Marbles by Ellen Forney, which I highly recommend if you have any interest in all. It's a graphic memoir. She's a cartoonist.
Yeah.
But there's something about watching actors and actresses play bipolar that always reads phony to me.
Interesting.
You know, and it's like, I know manic means manic, but there's got to be a way to translate that into the camera where it doesn't just feel like you are unchecked by your director, you know?
I have friends who are bipolar. So do you.
I do.
And here's the thing about them. It's pretty chill, like almost all the time. You are not privy for much dramatics. And even if you are, I'm not speaking for all people.
I was going to say, this is your experience.
My experience with my bipolar friends is that they are occasionally, you know, on a roll,
uh-huh.
you know, with whatever situation they're going through. And, but it has never been the way it's portrayed in TV and film.
Well, yeah, I mean, and I think we have not been privy to those moments, and I'm not saying that it can't get big, but there's a way to portray something
yes.
that where you perceive it as, oh wow, this is a person who's having this episode,
yes,
as opposed to, wow, here's an actor who is just like taking the brakes off.
Well, yeah,
you know,
that's what I'm talking about.
And there's a difference.
Actor's license to go wild.
Exactly. And I have yet to see a performer really kind of parse that difference and get it right. But yeah, it was a strong field of films, I thought, and it was great to go. I hadn't been to South by Southwest in 5 years, so got to catch up with some friends in Austin and eat some amazing barbecue.
I know. I saw you all over Facebook eating all the things.
Oh, like you would have done it.
And I totally would have done exactly the same things.
Here's a tip. If you are in Austin and you're there on a Saturday.
Yeah.
If you don't get super drunk on Friday night and you're not all hungover on Saturday morning,
right.
Wake up early on Saturday morning, schlep out to Lexington
yep.
to this place called Snow's Barbecue that is only open on Saturdays.
Yes.
And they open at like 8 a.m. and there's generally always a line. We were the second people in line because A, we got there a little early, and B, it was raining and it was South by Southwest weekend and you know, there's various things going on. Our good friend Kim took me.
Okay.
So I've always thought that pastrami was a way to make to give the pork experience for people that don't eat pork, because it's the sort of juiciest, fattiest version of beef, you know?
Oh, okay, yes.
The brisket at Snow's is the porkiest beef I've ever eaten in my life. It was so juicy and tender, and I'm drooling a little just thinking about it. It was so good.
This is my friend, Porky Beef.
That's my drag name.
That's just my middle name.
It was so worth the drive out. And it was beautiful. I mean, you know, because it had been raining, so there was like clouds in the sky, and the blue bonnets have just bloomed. I put some pictures actually on our Instagram. We found this little tiny, like, 5-headstone cemetery of headstones from the early 19th or the early 20th century, outside of this fire station in Lexington.
I saw that Instagram
covered
picture.
In blue bonnets. And somebody asked me if when they come up red, are they still called blue bonnets or are they called something else?
I don't know. I've never seen a blue bonnet that come up red.
Oh, look at the pictures. There's like blue ones and there's all these little pink ones. I mean, I know technically they're all.
Are they blue bonnets if they come up
that's
red?
That's my
or is
question.
That something
I
else?
Don't know. I mean,
it's got to be something else.
Technically, they're all lupin.
All right.
Blue bonnets is what they call them in Texas. And I don't know if they call the other ones like pink bonnets or something. I have no idea. I'm sure someone will write in and let us know, please. linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. We have no idea.
So one thing I miss. It is one of the things I miss about Texas.
The blue bonnets?
The blue bonnets.
They're gorgeous.
They're so great.
They are great.
And they just cover everything.
And they grow by the highway.
They grow by the highway. And you see people. This is my favorite thing. You see people pull over on the freeway. Yank their baby out of the car, stick the kid on the median of the freeway.
Take its picture.
Take its picture in the blue bonnets. completely dangerous. And they do it all the time.
Well, this was a much safer place to take pictures of blue bonnets, I assure you.
All right, so stuff, movies.
Yes, let's, why not?
Let's dispense with Allegiant in 15 seconds.
We haven't seen it.
Here we go. We didn't see it. And here's why. Because F that movie. That's why.
I'll tell you.
The end.
I would have seen it for What the Flick, but they decided that the very first screening that they would hold, that the trade press would need to see to meet the embargo, was in Paris.
Great.
So I had to suddenly find a Paris stringer for the wrap, which we did not have before.
We have one now. We got one now.
And then I was rather frustrated to find out that there was an LA screening, but that was for junket people. So it's like, thanks. Thanks a lot, distributors. Distributors.
Did you just say distributors?
Yes.
Good.
So I didn't see it. I may go see it this week because somebody at What the Flick really wants to talk about it next week.
I won't.
But I would really rather stick a carpet tack into my eyelid if possible.
I'm not going because I've seen the first two Divergent films. They're bad.
They're awful.
And
I don't blanket hate the YA genre, but I don't like the Divergent movies, and I don't like the Maze Runner movies.
And if they had come to pass, you wouldn't have liked the sequel wave. To The Fifth Wave, or The Giver, or...
True. Although there were some that stopped after...
Whatever the hell else.
There were some that stopped after one that I would have watched more of.
The Creature, what's it called? Beautiful Creatures?
Oh, yeah, Beautiful Creatures, totally.
We kind of liked Beautiful Creatures.
I would have watched more of that. I would have watched more Cirque du Freak. That was kind of fun.
No.
I would have watched more of The Golden Compass, if we're counting that.
As you know, I was inadvisably into I Am Number 4.
Oh, God. You were blurbed for that movie.
I know. So embarrassing.
Our friend Peter DeBruge, who's been on the show a couple times, used to, when he lived in Los Angeles, he had a really great tradition, which was the first time that you got quoted in a newspaper ad for a movie. Newspapers are these things that come out every day and are printed on paper.
Yeah.
He would make you a t-shirt that on the front would say in giant yellow letters, quote whore, in like the ugliest fonts he could find.
Yeah.
And then on the back, your blurb would appear.
Your sad, embarrassing blurb. And here's the thing. It's never a blurb. It was never a blurb for a good movie.
Of course.
It was a blurb that it was either for a bad movie that you somehow weirdly liked and gave enough of a decent review to that the publicists jumped on it and took it. Or it's a sentence that is completely strangled and chopped to pieces.
To have just the good parts.
From a mediocre review, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, my quote whore t-shirt came from The Golden Compass, actually. I gave it a good review. But of course, they quote me in a way that just make it's barely a sentence. It's really choppy. And yours was I Am Number 4.
So I'm not going to see Allegiant.
I don't blame you. I'm done.
One of the pleasures of quitting movies.com is not having to see what I don't want to see.
Yeah. If I can get out of it, I will, because blah.
Right.
I mean, the only reason to see it would be if I get stuck having to review the last one, then I'll have to see this one anyway, so I might as well keep up.
Oh, I ran into someone this past week who thought that I had been fired from movies.com. Like, they fired you, right? Why did they do that? I was like, you know, I said I quit. I said it on the podcast. I said it on Facebook. I said it on Twitter. And he goes,
well, sure, you say that.
He goes, yeah, but I just thought that's what you were just saying. I go, no!
You're just trying to keep face.
I quit. I broke with them.
That's right.
I broke with them. I said it 3 times. And then I took a dump on their shoes.
Metaphorically. So I will probably go see it just because I may well get stuck having to review the last one and then I'll have to see this anyway. But
Have a good time.
Look, I've still never seen any of the Alvin and the Chipmunks movies, so, you know.
They're better than the Divergent films.
Probably.
They're far more entertaining. All right. Why don't you talk about this thing that you saw that I saw snippets of? The Clan.
Yeah.
The Argentine film.
Argentine film. This was actually the Argentine entry to the Oscars for this year. It did not make the final five. But it's being released by Fox Searchlight, who is not a distributor that does a lot of foreign films. I'm thinking maybe because this is a Spanish language foreign film, they're maybe trying to sort of angle it into Hispanic markets and maybe even Hispanic theaters. It's only opening, it's fairly limited right now, but I imagine it'll be expanding. It is based on a true story, but a shocking one. And the movie begins with the police raiding this house and, like, you know, holding this family at gunpoint. You think, oh God, how terrible. And then you find out who this family is and what they do and why the police showed up. So we begin late 70s, early 80s, and it's the you know, totalitarian regime in Argentina and the people being disappeared and, you know, all that stuff. And this guy, with the help of his son and some other comrades, kidnap wealthy people, and they call the family and they claim they're from the something liberation front, but, you know, they're about as political as Hans Gruber. They're just there for the ransom. And so you have like the family, you know, so there's an oldest son who went off to play soccer in New Zealand and hasn't been heard from in ages. And then the second son, also like really good at soccer and rugby, is on like the national team, and he's got the shaggy like Diego Maradona hair, and, you know, all the ladies think he's the bee's knees.
He's pretty dreamy.
He's pretty cute.
I was watching the movie going,
I think his name is Peter Lanzano or something. It's his first film. And but he's got like a younger brother and two younger sisters. And, you know, the mother is a school teacher and the father has some, I forget what his job is. But, you know, every so often, like, there will be screams coming from the basement or the upstairs guest bathroom because, you know, that's where the prisoners are, you know.
Right.
And they're just all kind of oblivious and they are aware of what's happening to differing extents. But for the most part, they're pretty clued in. And at one point, the, you know, somebody else tells the father of this family, oh, well, you know, your hospitality has always been, you know, very admired, you know, because these people are being, you know, imprisoned and you know, tortured into writing these letters to their family asking for money. But, you know, they do get a home cooked meal at least.
Right.
So, yeah, it's from
so basically, if we went into the kidnapping business.
Uh-huh.
They'd still get a lot of good baked goods.
Exactly. I'm sure you'd make muffins, you know.
I would make them some muffins.
Yeah.
But, you know, we can't go into the kidnapping business because we don't have room.
No.
And they would make a lot of noise. And, you know, I don't like neighbors who make a lot of noise.
That's true. Yeah. We'd have the people downstairs with the dogs would be leaving notes on our door.
We'd have to do torture things to them, which would be a bummer. I wouldn't like that either.
No, you don't want to do that.
I like watching it in an Eli Roth film.
Yes.
But, yeah. Okay, it's a bad idea.
This movie is not that. It is so not an Eli Roth movie. They don't really get into the details of what happens to these kidnapped victims. It's very darkly funny in a Latin American kind of way, you know, in the sort of the banality of how this kidnapping stuff is just part of the day-to-day existence of these people and how pragmatic they are about the whole thing. But as the hot son sort of becomes more aware that there's not just kidnapping going on, but also murder,
just going to call it from now on the hot sun.
The hot sun, yeah. Right. He's less into it all. It's produced by the same team that did Wild Tales a year or two ago, which includes Pedro and Agustin Almodovar. So it's very well put together, and like I said, it's darkly funny at times, but also very creepy and intense. I was fascinated by it, and it was interesting. It's a movie where you're interested in going back afterwards and reading about what actually went down and finding out like how much of the movie is accurate, like things that happened, specific things that happened. You're like, oh, well, surely that was dramatic license. Oh, no, no.
Oh, no, it really happened.
It really happened.
Nice.
So, yeah, it's getting a very small release, but if it comes around near you, check out The Clan. Very cool movie.
Saw Miracles from Heaven.
Yes, you did.
You did not see Miracles from
Heaven. I did not.
Here's a weird thing.
Yes.
It ain't bad.
That's what I'm reading all over from you and others.
Like more than I'm faint praising it here. It's actually kind of good.
Huh.
It's from the people who gave us Heaven Is For Real.
Which people? The producers?
The producers. Okay. T.D. Jakes and...
Oh, it's him. Okay.
Some other folks.
Gotcha. And also based on a book.
Also based on a book, much like Heaven Is For Real. Now, to my knowledge, the woman who wrote Miracles From Heaven has not turned it into an industry.
Hmm.
The Burpo family.
Unlike the Heaven Is For Real.
Yeah, the Burpo family from Heaven Is For Real... They took that story and they ran. They are just, in the words of Wendy Williams, making cakes. Like, that's, they've got a live event series that tours. They've got Sunday school curriculum. They've got everything.
Well, it's
that kid was making it up, he's never going to recant. Unless you said you thought he did recant.
Maybe I'm confusing with somebody else.
I haven't been concerned enough about them to go hunt that down.
Okay.
Maybe I will later.
It's funny. I just recently reposted that amazing monologue that Jeff Daniels has in the first episode of The Newsroom.
Yes.
Where he talks about how America isn't the best country in the world anymore.
Correct, right.
And he lists like the three things that we're number one at, and one of them is adults who believe in angels.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So, the thing with Heaven Is For Real is they took that child's story and made it the centerpiece of not only the film, but also the subsequent capitalist ventures that have sprung up in its wake.
Oh, sorry. No. It's... the kid from The Boy Who Came Back From Heaven admitted that it was not true. And I
never even heard of this one.
And in a bit of irony that you couldn't make up,
yes,
his last name
is
Malarkey. Alex Malarkey, the young man at the center of The Boy Who Came Back From Heaven, said this week that the story was
all made up. Malarkey or Burpo? Shall we continue?
Oh, by all means.
All right. Christy Beam wrote a memoir called Miracles from Heaven. It is about her 9-10-year-old daughter.
Mm-hmm. Who's played by the little girl from Space Station 76.
Yes.
Who was great in that movie.
Her name is Kylie Rogers.
Yes.
She is a good little kid actress.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you why in a minute. Here's what happened to Kylie Rogers is the girl who plays the girl. I think her name is Anna.
Mm-hmm.
So the kid develops this digestive problem, and it causes her immense pain. And they take her to doctors over and over, and the doctors all say, oh, it's just acid reflux. Oh, it's lactose intolerance. With each misdiagnosis, the mom is more upset. Now, the mom in the movie is played by Jennifer Garner, who is really perfectly cast here. Because when you think of Jennifer Garner, after you think about Alias and the string of terrible films that she's been in, the first thing you think about when you think about Jennifer Garner is well known for being a mom.
Right.
And a really devoted one. And in the middle of this divorce that she's going through, one who's really protective of the kids and making sure that things are as smooth
stable,
as they can be and stable for the kids. So she is the mom in the movie. And she's really good.
Hmm.
A friend of mine texted me a couple weeks ago and said, why is she in this garbage? Now, this person has not seen the film.
Right.
But everyone had every reason to believe that this was going to be a very bad movie.
Well, yeah, it's like when you see Nicolas Cage in Left Behind.
Yeah. And I, as I watched the movie, I thought, oh, well, here's why she's in it.
Meaty role for a woman.
Her name is above the title, for starters, which is not what Jennifer Garner gets
from
the film industry. And the movie's about her. It's not about this miracle. It's kind of about the kid, but it's about Jennifer Garner. It's about this mother who ferociously fights to get her child diagnosed properly and to get her treated. And then to sit back and freak out over the fact that her kid is going to die. She is diagnosed by a doctor whose last name is Nurko, who lives in Boston. He's a pediatric gastroenterologist. The child has a intestinal motility disorder. Her brain does not tell the intestines to function. So she cannot process food. She has to be fed through a tube. And this is a degenerative disorder with no cure.
Boo.
Meaning, you die.
Right.
You die because your body is not functioning in one of the
primary
ways. It's as if your lungs, your brain stopped telling your lungs to function.
Right.
And so,
but you know what? If that were the case, that's what iron lungs are for, right? Don't
I guess
you can autonomically or whatever.
They don't have a fix for this yet, or any kind of good treatment. So after all of this agony, she learns that her child has a fatal thing that's going to kill her. And the next chunk of the movie is about facing down death. So where you have conversations between the kid and this other kid in the hospital about what it's going to be like to die. Agonizing, really moving conversation between Garner and the little girl, Kylie Rogers, where the little girl is like, please just let me die. And you're sitting in the theater, and I can hear the, there was a bunch of church folks behind me at the press screening. They were crying, but I was getting choked up too. Like, this is actually very effectively told. And the filmmaking is not showy. Patricia Riggin, who made The 33 and a
Under the Same Moon,
couple other things. She doesn't play up any sort of histrionic stuff. She lets it play out like this is really happening to real people.
Like the string section doesn't come welling up or anything.
It might. Not in a way that made me, you know.
That's gross.
Exactly. But Garner's performance is great. If this were not an overtly Christian film, and if it were released in November,
we'd be talking about her in award season.
There would be an Oscar campaign for her.
Wow.
She's good. And then the miracle. All right. Now, the thing that happens
is this. If you've seen the trailer for the movie, you pretty much know all of the plot
points. I don't think it's possible that anyone hasn't seen the trailer for this movie. I have not seen a film this slam marketed in a while. It was on every TV show. It was in front of every film.
Yeah, we saw it before Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. Yeah, it wasn't like it was only playing before other
Christian
movies.
Everywhere. I've seen this trailer more often than I've seen some films I love, you know. And the trailer chronologically lays out every single plot point of the film with no surprises left in the movie. There are no spoilers to give because the trailer
pre-spoiled
tells you all about it. The kid, they have a giant old hollow cottonwood tree on their property. And the kid...
Does it murmur?
Her sister... No, but it is fake. Oh, man. It's so fake. Like, they start climbing this tree, and I was like, that ain't a real tree.
That's a prop.
Yeah,
That's a set.
It's like an apple. That's like the apple throwing trees from the Wizard of Oz. Like, those are more realistic.
Like the ones on Puff and Stuff.
Than this, yeah. The talking trees in other children's entertainments look more real than this fake ass tree. So she and her sister start climbing this tree, and they're way high up. And she falls into it, into the hollowed out core of the tree. And cracks her head and goes into an unconscious state. She doesn't die, first of all.
Right.
She's barely injured.
Wait, how does she get to a state that she's well enough to play in a tree if she's been in a hospital near death?
She's out of the hospital. She's home, just sort of like they're trying to make her, you know,
comfortable
and happy. And her sister's like, come out and play with me. Come out and play with me. Come out and play with me. And she's like, okay. Somehow she forgets herself enough to climb a tree with the, uh-huh. with the sister. Falls into the tree. And this is well documented. I mean, this really happened. It was on the news.
Right.
And so the kid, she cracks her head. She doesn't die. She's barely injured. Oh, yeah. And she's cured of the stuff.
Right.
Now, a miracle is defined by the person who experiences the event.
Sure.
If you are not a religious person, then if an unexplained event happens, then it is a crazy coincidence. How could this have happened? We don't know. Is something in the fall jump-started her central nervous system to start talking to her intestinal, her GI tract?
Right.
Nobody knows how or why.
So they don't know if it's the fall. They don't know if it's the hit. They don't know just something that it just... I see. But science takes over and wants to figure out.
Science doesn't understand what happened yet.
Right.
They probably will eventually.
Yeah, that's like they always say in the comics, like magic is just science you don't understand.
Right. And so, but if you are an evangelical Christian family like the Beams, then it's a miracle from heaven.
Right.
Later in the film, the little girl sits her parents down and goes, oh yeah, by the way, I went to heaven. And Jennifer Garner looks at her and says, people might not hear this very well. Which is a great sort of moment. And because not only does that happen, but when the kid actually, when they show the kid actually going to heaven, in quotes, they frame it as a visual experience that she is now in based on visual experiences she had before the fall.
Right.
So in one...
Like a dream, basically.
She's in Monet's Water Lilies because she and Jennifer Garner and Queen Latifah, as their kindly waitress friend, went to the museum and saw one of the large water lily paintings. So that's part of her heaven.
What's the Robin Williams movie where he dies and goes into paintings?
I forget the name, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
What Dreams May Come?
What Dreams May Come.
Is that what it's called? It.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
And then the other thing is her just walking on some clouds, which would be typical religious kitsch.
Sure.
If it weren't for the fact that in one scene before the fall, she's in an airplane looking out the window and they are on top of the clouds.
Gotcha.
And so...
So it's like...
No one ever says this, but there is visual evidence to suggest that, look, if you don't believe this, you may, you may attribute it to the child's imagination.
Right.
Doesn't matter. The movie is not even really about the miracle.
Right.
The movie is about Jennifer Garner's agonizing crisis of faith. Her husband, played by Torque, keeps saying to her... What's his name?
Martin Henderson.
Keeps saying to her, baby, we can't lose our faith. And she just looks at him with like this dead-eyed face. And she's like, I don't have any faith. Get away from me with
and
this.
And the church folks are awful, right?
Well, generally they're nice. Like the pastor played by John Carroll Lynch. What a great guy to play a pastor, a nice pastor of a church. There are two or three pieces of ish at this church who come up to her after a service and say, we're concerned that there's sin in your family that's causing this problem. She looks at him like, I'll kill you right here with my bare hands. And then later in another scene, she goes to talk to John Carroll Lynch and she said, okay, here's what they said to me. And he looks at her and he sighs and he goes, we can't choose our neighbors. We can only choose to love them. And her response is, well, I'm going to have to love them from home because I'm not coming back. So she's great in this movie. And the film is really about that, that doubt, if I may get Bressani in here for a moment.
Oh, do.
She talks over and over about how she cannot pray, which is exactly what
Diary of a Country Priest.
Diary of a Country Priest, the priest in the film, says over and over and over, I can't even pray. I don't know what I think. I don't believe anything. I don't think. I'm worried that I don't believe anything. I can't even pray. There is no God in my life. And there's even a line in this movie where Jennifer Garner says, like, I don't know. Is there a God? Because I don't hear a thing and I don't see a thing happening. And my kid's going to die. So explain that to me. So it's much more tough-minded than you would ever believe from watching the trailer or from the history, the
current history,
the recent history of evangelical film.
And
I don't know how it's going to do with the box office.
It's doing well.
Okay, well then, it might be one of those moments where real trumps, you know, the wishful thinking of the audience.
Right. Well, and you were saying also that it's a movie that allows for doubt, which has certainly not been a strong point of these movies of late.
No, it's not at all. The people who doubt, I always go back to God's Not Dead because it's such toxic garbage. People who doubt in films like that, they just get hit by cars. Like,
yeah, I was thinking of the Sean Astin character in Do You Believe?
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah. You doubt in those movies, and you're actually, God is going to murder you.
The safe is going to fall on your
before
head
before the movie's over. Yeah, and so a good Christian movie.
All right, it was, you know, again, 100 Monkeys and 100 Typewriters. Eventually, we were going to get one if they're going to start making this many.
I would still like it more if the evangelical Christian belief in the supernatural were presented in ways that felt not smug.
Mm.
This one almost gets there.
Yeah.
I'll be generous. It kind of gets there.
Okay.
But often...
Well, in terms of the miracle is presented as a reward for devoted service.
That wall you have to climb over if you are not a conservative evangelical,
mm-hmm.
or just any old kind of evangelical. If you are an evangelical who also believes in the presence of supernatural events in your own life and in the lives of others,
mm-hmm.
and you don't have to be.
Yeah.
You can be an evangelical and sort of believe in science and believe that, well, actually, maybe angels aren't watching over me. Sorry, Amy Grant, but maybe they aren't.
Do they make those kind of evangelicals anymore?
I know some.
Okay.
Yeah.
I trust you.
I know some reasonable ones. Yeah. And so I would like it if that could happen, because in the film we're about to discuss next, the spirit world is absolutely present and it is meant to be taken at complete face value.
Sure.
And accepted as, you know, the events are taking place in front of you.
Right. But in a context that has nothing to do with Christianity.
And it has nothing to... Yeah, it has nothing to do with Christianity, and it also has nothing to do with trying to convince you...
Right.
...of anything.
Yeah. To which you are referring is Api Chapong's Vera Sethicool's Cemetery of Splendor.
My favorite film of the year so far.
Why aren't I surprised?
You are not surprised. it's funny... I've been going back and saving reviews from movies.com.
Yeah.
I've been like copying, pasting.
Because you never know when things are just going to disappear off
the
internet one day.
If you write for the internet and you quit that gig or that site decides to be sold or shut down or move along without you, you better
have backups.
Back up your stuff. Yeah,
because I have a year's worth of stuff that is just poof.
So I've been doing that. And I finally gave myself permission to go look at some of the comments from time to time, which I never allowed myself to do while I was there.
But years later, who cares?
But a year after I quit, it doesn't matter anymore. And, and it's not like I have to have any kind of conversation with these people. I mean, I didn't have to have one anyway. But
right.
So I looked at reviews of some of the Christian films that I reviewed, and people just losing their minds. and calling me an atheist, calling me a liberal, all the bad words.
Oh, yes. Owned by horrors. What?
All the bad words they can think to say about me. And you know, I'm reading the comments and I'm thinking, you have no idea what I am. Mm. You do not know what I am. Oh, yeah. Telling me, well, he's gay, so he must, you know, he must be anti-Christ. And as I have always said in a public way, you're not going to know what I believe ever. If you think you know what I believe, you don't. Because I'm not talking about it. I'm obsessed with evangelical culture.
Yeah.
Because I came up in it.
Right.
And I go see all the Christian movies, and I do have some personal beliefs, but you're never going to hear about them on this podcast, and I'm not writing about them, and I'm not even going to have a conversation with you about it, honestly, if you try to engage me about it. Mm-hmm. We're not talking. Because I've been burned so hard by the folks I ran away from that I no longer care to have the conversation.
Sure.
I just want to study it. And keep looking at it, mm-hmm. and to figure out what I can figure out about it.
Right.
That's why I love these movies so much. Or I shouldn't say I love the movies. It's why I love going to the movies.
Yes.
These
You're
films
fascinated by
so
them.
Much. Yeah. Having said that, not a single comment on my review of Miracles from Heaven that I wrote for The Wrap this mm-hmm. week. If you haven't seen my review of Miracles from Heaven, it's up on The Wrap this week. This editor guy I know of The Wrap sent me to it because he was desperate for someone to go see that film.
And I was excited to have you write about a Christian movie for us because you, I think, bring a perspective to it that most other critics don't.
Well, I know the language.
Well, exactly. You know that world well enough to understand what their goals are and how they're going about, you know, accomplishing
yes.
them.
Yeah.
But you aren't totally in the tank. And most critics are either... They either have no idea what this is and they're just like, what is... Or
right.
they're cheerleaders for the faith, no matter how bad the movie is, because they're just
the
glad it exists.
Always so bad.
I mean, and you're not the only one. I mean, I have found like
Christy liked it too.
Sure, but I'm saying in terms of people who really understand the meat of these films,
yes.
I have found Christian bloggers who have written posts like, why are Christian movies so bad?
So bad, yeah, you sent me a couple of those.
So there
not
are
a,
there,
not a single comment on that Wrap review is yeah. where I was going with this.
Well, sure, because no Christian can read that review and come away from it offended,
right?
You know, and no sort of snarky atheist can come away from that review feeling like, yeah, you know, it's you really are you're fair to
yeah.
it, you know. And at the same time, you are expressing an opinion. It's not like you're just being in the mushy middle. You're talking about what the film does right. You're talking about what the film does wrong. You talk about what these films in general often do wrong that this movie isn't doing.
Right.
And yeah, no. So nobody can sort of point at that and go, oh, well, this guy, he, meh, 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 you know. And you know what? And I turned myself inside out on all three Atlas Shrugged movies to explain that I was not reviewing objectivism.
Right.
I was reviewing these
yes.
movies as movies and
yes.
why they're terrible as movies.
Yes.
And inevitably, the comment section was always, well, you know, these left-wing... So whatever.
Okay, so
Cemetery of Splendor, which I saw at Sundance, and you got to catch up with.
Finally,
this week in LA.
Yeah. It opened last week in New York and Los Angeles.
Yeah.
I don't know what sort of national release rollout it's going to get. Strand, sometimes it seems to predicate what they're going to do with it nationwide
based on
how it does in other cities,
which
makes sense.
New
York and LA.
I would say I bet that if you live in a city with a substantial Asian community, like say San Francisco,
it'll probably play in San Francisco.
It'll probably play there. You know, maybe like some sort of second tier, like Boston-y kind of, you know, markets that have colleges, maybe. I don't know.
Museums.
Yeah, like it may show up in your town for a night
right.
for one show.
Right. I don't know where you can go to find that information, but...
if you go to strandreleasing.com, do they not
They're real sketchy on that sort of information.
I see, okay.
I've done that before. Cinema Guild will tell you straight up what museum and what night.
I see.
You know.
We know some people at Strand. We'll have to get on their back about
Strand
that.
Strand doesn't always do that.
Strand is also releasing Eisenstein in Guanajuato, which you should also totally go check out if it comes to you.
Yeah, I guess that would probably still be in a release.
I'm sure it's still making its way around. Yeah, totally.
So, The Cemetery of Splendor is about a woman who volunteers her time at a makeshift hospital.
In an old school.
That has been built inside an abandoned school.
Yeah.
In this hospital, in this sort of makeshift hospital, there is a collection of soldiers who have a mysterious sleeping sickness. Yeah. They cannot wake up. And no one knows why. It's either trauma from the recent military coup, or it is something else. They bring in a psychic who communicates with the soldiers through their dreams. And she comes to the conclusion that because the school was built on an old cemetery,
a royal burial ground.
That was a royal burial ground that the kings and queens who were buried there are using the energy of the soldiers to continue their battles.
Which does not explain how they had the sleeping sickness before they were sent to the makeshift hospital in the old elementary school.
Correct. And the film does not explain that.
Not that it matters.
Now, during the course of her volunteer work, a soldier wakes up. Maybe. His name is Eat.
I think so, yeah.
I-T-T. Her name is Jen. She's a middle-aged woman.
She's got that ailment where she's got one leg that's significantly shorter than the other one.
10 centimeters shorter than the other one. Yeah. So she has a platform shoe, and she walks with some crutch.
Right. And she's married to an American?
She is married to an American man who comes and goes. He shows up, and then he leaves. Like, there, you see him exercising with some people, and that's all you see.
Yeah.
That may actually be her real husband.
Oh, the actress?
Yeah. Because she, her name is Janjira. I don't know if that's how to pronounce it or not. She's been in most of Where Seth Gould's films.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that. But and, yeah, so the soldier who wakes up is still prone to immediately fall asleep with no notice. So they'll be eating a meal, watching a movie.
And he'll just pass out again. Yeah. So he either is actually awake and having conversations with her, or they are communicating on a subconscious level.
Right.
And in the scenes where they're communicating, we see him as awake.
Yeah. It gets a little Inception-y here.
Yeah.
there's a scene where she meets two women who turn out to be
the
goddesses of the shrine.
And this is what I'm talking about. This matter-of-fact presentation.
Right.
Which is not only, something that I wish the evangelical films would do, but is a definite marker of a Where Seth Gould film.
Mm-hmm.
Jen goes to a shrine, which in Thai culture is not exactly Buddhist. It's based more in animism. I did my homework.
I was going to say, tell me more. I don't know any of this.
Animism predates Buddhism in Thailand.
All those shrines in Japan, are those Buddhist or Shinto?
I don't know about Japan.
Okay.
We're just talking about Thailand right now.
I know. That's the country where I know from movies that there are shrines all over the place.
Yeah. So people go to the shrines and they leave things for the spirits. Because spirit worship, like I said, predates Buddhism.
Mm-hmm.
And it is such an ingrained part of Thai culture that it's just a matter-of-fact thing. Everywhere you go, they've got these little shrines that are set up just in public places.
Mm-hmm.
So she goes to the shrine, and she leaves some stuff. And there are these two statues there. And you don't really know what they're supposed to be, these two statues of two women. But then they come to life and they start talking to her. And they're like, hey, we're the princesses from the shrines.
Yeah. They don't come to life in the shrine. They just show up when
she's having lunch in a gazebo. Yeah, in a park. And they're like, yeah, this is us. Hey, here we are. And she looks at them like, what is going on? She's so expressive and she's such a cool presence in this movie. And she's so low-key about her own involvement in the spirit world that you fully go with her. You don't have to know anything about this stuff to be on her team and to accept what's happening to her.
Sure.
She even says at one point to the husband, when he's asking questions about this sort of thing, she says, you're a foreigner. You won't get it, honey. That's a literal quote.
Yes.
I wrote down that quote.
And the movie, I'm not going to give away the ending, but it ends in such a way that it allows for multiple interpretations.
Yes. So what you have in this film is a deep immersion into ideas about the spirit world coming to life and about national trauma represented by these soldiers who cannot wake up. But it's also, and this is one thing I love about Weerasethakul's films, is that they aren't just symbolic. They aren't just, meaning
metaphorical.
as delivered by the structure of the film. Now, his older films, Syndromes in a Century,
Tropical Malady,
they have this sort of neat bifurcation where first half of the movie is about one thing. The second half of the movie may actually start the film over again,
right,
telling it from a different perspective. And I've read interviews with him where he said stuff like, well, those movies, I really wanted the structure to give you the meaning of the film. And in his more recent films, Boon Mi and this, he's more invested in the characters. And what you get, especially from this film, is this slow enveloping of a kind of gentle feeling of love and care. This is a movie about this woman as she learns to love a person that she doesn't know. She even calls him her new son.
Her son, yeah.
And the rhythms of it and the visuals of it sort of slowly wash over you. And it's a very quiet, slowly paced film.
I was going to say, as a caveat, you need to be real awake for this. Because not only is this a sort of deliberate movie and very much kind of a tone piece, it's specifically about sleep.
Yes.
And so you have these scenes where the soldiers have nightmares, and then these people, they bring in these light generators. Well, they all get like CPAP machines, basically.
More or less, yeah.
Yeah, but they also get these light things that are, they're blue and red.
Long bent tubes of light.
Yeah, and they just kind of go through this spectrum in a slow way, and
it's meant to be light therapy for them.
It's a calming thing for the sleeping people. But so you're watching people sleep, and you're watching them sleep under these things that are designed to make them sleep better, and it's real hard not to fall asleep during this movie.
It is a hypnotic film.
My eyelids got heavy a few times, and I at least thought, well, okay, I'm interacting with this movie, because he is deliberately trying to put me to sleep in a way, and so, you know, it and you know how when you kind of nod off during a movie, you sort of like lose bits. It sort of put me more in the dreamy mindset of the movie. But just, yeah, if you can be like extra caffeinated, I would recommend that, because this is a movie that will literally lull you into like REM if you're not careful.
Unlike Miracles from Heaven, in which supernatural events intervene into the real life of these people, I feel like this is a film about a woman from the human world,
right,
trying to intervene in the spirit world.
Sure.
Trying to connect to a man who may or may not actually be awake.
Right.
And who may or may not simply be communicating with her in the spirit world.
Right.
It's so beautiful and so calm and so thoughtful and meditative. And like I said, it's a very loving movie.
Yeah.
And that's the feeling you're left with, even if you don't understand every visual element that you witness.
Sure. But yeah, no, there are some gorgeous passages. Like, you know, you get to know that sequence of colors in those tubes.
Yeah.
And then later, the director uses them over shots of locations that we have come to know over the course of the film, but that are now empty.
Yes.
In a way that's really haunting and beautiful.
Yeah. So there's all this other stuff in Animism about the spirit of the land and what you have to do to it if you're going to build on top of it, which is what's happening.
Interesting.
In the film, you know, a fiber optic company is building an office or something right next to it, and they're eventually going to take over the space.
Yes.
So I want to see it again. I've said this before. His movies slow down my heart rate. I want to live inside them.
So we don't get to have a dog because you could just go see this guy's movies.
I love his movies so much. And it, like I say, I'm a dummy from America who doesn't know much at all about Buddhism or especially Thai animism.
Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. I get it. And I feel well cared for by this man's films. And I think that anyone who goes to see this movie without the need to interpret or get it every single moment of the time they're watching it, you're going to have a wonderful experience.
It's one of those movies you have to sort of give yourself over to. Like, I always cite Scent of Green Papaya as that kind of movie where you have to just like stop trying to impose whatever you're thinking about the movie and what it should be doing and where you think it's going to take you, and just go with it and follow it on its path, and it will take you somewhere really cool.
Yeah.
We also saw Pee-wee's Big Holiday.
Oh yeah. Last night.
Which just premiered on Netflix this weekend. And it is, we are long overdue for a Pee-wee movie, because what, Big Top Pee-wee was 1988?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been nearly 30 years since we've had a Pee-wee feature.
It's adorable.
It's sweet. It's a road movie, so it's just sort of kind of an excuse to have a series of goofy sketches and
just
encounters.
Just like Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Just like Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Yeah.
Pee-wee lives in a town called Fairville, and he is in a very happy rut, and he's never left town. And then one day Joe Manganiello shows up playing Joe Manganiello,
playing himself,
and invites Pee-wee.
And they become instant friends
because they both love root beer barrels, and
they love all the same things.
All the same things.
Yeah.
And so Joe invites him to his big birthday party in New York in 5 days at his penthouse, and encourages Pee-wee encourages Pee-wee to break some rules and get out of town and live life a little. And Pee-wee does, and encounters a trio of bank robbers who are will be very familiar to those who know the works of Russ Meyer. He meets some Amish folks and a wilderness guy. And
team of hairstylists.
and a woman in a flying car and all kinds of folks. And it's delightful. It is, if you like Pee-wee, this will give you all the kind of Pee-wee stuff that you want.
It's a little low budget. You can tell it's a TV Netflix kind of budget.
Yeah. Although Judd Apatow was one of the executive producers.
Right.
And it was Paul Rubens co-wrote it with Paul Rust, who is the star of Love, which we were not crazy about, but we hear it gets better and then it gets even worse.
The surprise MVP of this movie is Joe Manganiello.
Yeah.
Who commits wholeheartedly to the Pee-wee
aesthetic.
Yeah. And the Pee-wee lifestyle.
Yes.
And who is so jubilantly weird through the entire thing. You don't even care about Pee-wee. If you don't care about Pee-wee, it's worth watching
for him.
Just for him. Yeah.
I mean, you know from the Magic Mike movies that he has a sense of humor, but you're right. He just sort of gleefully throws himself into this whole thing. As himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that, I believe that is himself.
I would like to think
so. I've just decided that that is now who he is.
I would like to think so. But yeah, it's charming. It's fun. You should totally, if you're a fan of Pee-wee Herman, and if you're not, what's wrong with you?
Right.
Yeah, you should see it.
While you were gone,
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to talk about these very much, but while you were gone, I watched The Harvey Girls.
Oh, yeah.
Had you ever seen it before?
I love From the Etch, on the Etch and Topeka in the Santa Fe. It's a great song. It goes on for 10 minutes.
Here's a little piece of trivia about Miss Garland in that particular scene.
What's that?
She didn't bother coming to rehearsals.
Oh, she was improvising?
No. She watched them go through it one time.
Uh-huh.
And then she said, got it. And then...
Nailed it. Nice.
In a take. In that entire number, there are three cuts. Sorry, there are two cuts. Three shots,
right.
Two cuts. And the only, and I can only imagine that the cut was of this one insert shot was because of some little flub that happened.
Yeah.
But they kept going. Even if there was a bit of a visual flub. The entire number she does from start to finish.
Wow.
And it's done. And I gotta say, the dancing in that bit and the sheer number of people involved in singing that song. Everybody gets a little bit of a line, you know.
Those weird bridges where the women are talking about, like, you know, so I finally left Paris, Illinois.
Yeah, it's so great. Weird
that weird line that Marjorie Main sings, and she's a squawking like this, but yeah. Kind of in tune.
Yeah. Yeah. So much fun that movie.
Lots of crisp linen aprons.
Here's what's not fun. Till the Clouds Roll By.
Ugh. Yeah, all those MGM biopics of composers are pretty painful.
That was the other thing.
Words and music. And
I gave myself an entire day at home while you were gone last Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
I had no human contact. I didn't leave the house except to go to the grocery store to get some ingredients.
Right.
I wasn't online. I just was old. And
you had a date with Judy.
I had a date with TCM that day. And it felt great not to talk to people, not to be on the internet. But I did watch Until the Clouds Roll By. Till the Clouds Roll By. A biopic of songwriter, Jerome Kern.
Mm-hmm.
That ain't good. The musical sequences are fantastic.
Yeah, those movies now only exist to have numbers be in, like, the subsequent That's Entertainment movies or whatever. But yeah, the films they're terrible.
The musical sequences are fantastic. The biopic portions where you learn all about Jerome Kern's super boring life. You fast forward right through those. About halfway through the movie, I thought, oh, wait, this is in TiVo. I don't have to watch...
I can just skip to the next number.
I don't have to watch the talking parts. I can just skip right to the musical parts. Those are great. Miss Garland's moments were directed by Vincent Minnelli.
Nice.
The rest of the movie was directed by someone whose name I do not know.
Is it like Charles Walters or something?
I don't remember. But it ain't good.
Mm.
I also finally watched the last movie in the Showa box set.
Because nothing goes with Judy Garland like some Holocaust.
My friend Matt Severson, friend of the show, he lent me his box set of Showa and like four other documentaries by Claude Lanzmann.
Mm-hmm.
All of them footage that he shot at the time of Showa, but did not use in Showa. They became other standalone documentaries because he had so much footage.
Right.
So this one I watched, A Visitor from the Living. It's very short. It's about 75 minutes long.
Wow, that's a blip for Lanzmann.
Yeah, and the entire film is an interview with the guy from the Red Cross, I think it's the Swiss Red Cross, who went to Theresienstadt, the ghetto at Theresienstadt, and filed a glowing report. And was like, everything's great here. Look how happy they all are. And here is how Claude Lanzmann interviews people. If you've never seen a film by him, he has people who were either actual Nazis, actual war criminals, collaborators, people whose job it should have been to intervene somehow, some way, or just citizens who happen to be around at the time. And here's how he interviews everybody. So what happened? Then what happened? Okay. What did you do? Right. How did you feel about that? Okay, thanks. We're done. And this might be like all he says in, you know, a 15 or 20 minute interview.
So this is a 75 minute interview with this one guy.
And meanwhile, these people are hanging themselves on camera, whether they mean to or not.
Sure. Why do you say yes to that interview?
I don't know.
If you're that person.
I don't know.
It's like the people who
It was the 70s when this footage was shot.
Still.
And so I don't know that people had as much sophistication about, why do you want to interview me about this monumental horror?
I guess. That but took it's place, like the people who, you know, still agree to be interviewed on The Daily Show.
Right, yes.
Like, at what point do people finally go, oh, you're going to make an ass of me, I'll pass, thanks.
Yes.
No, they keep doing it.
Yeah. So anyway, I said it before, I'll say it again. Get that show a box. Watch them all. You're going to learn some stuff. Stuff you need to know. Stuff you should know. And these films are not boring. They're riveting. And you are there for every minute of it. So, yeah. My DVD pick of the week, however, is Anything You Can Find by Apichatpong Weerasethakul. A couple of his titles are out of print. I've done the homework this time.
Okay, I was going to ask.
But several of them
are available.
Uncle Boonmi, Who Can Recall His Past Lives.
Which, not only is it a great movie, I think it's a great first movie for this director.
I think you're right.
So let's just say Uncle Boonmi.
But I've recommended Uncle Boonmi before. So
okay, fine.
You could also... Syndromes in a Century, Tropical Malady, Blissfully Yours. I think Mysterious Object at Noon is not available.
Okay.
But most everything else is. And so, and the great thing about Cemetery of Splendor is that it has direct connections to the other films that I just mentioned.
Sure.
Specifically to Boonmi and Syndromes in a Century. His parents were doctors, so he returns to the medical setting over and over again.
Yeah.
And, they're all great.
I asked Pedro Almodovar in an interview once why he liked telling stories in hospitals.
Yes.
He said, a lot of things happen there.
They sure do. What's your DVD pick?
Well, my DVD pick was going to be The Official Story to tie in with The Clan, which is this amazing Argentine film about the immediate post-dictatorship period and people still trying to kind of piece together.
It's from the 80s.
From the 80s, what happened to loved ones.
Yeah.
It is not available on DVD, however.
Oh, bummer.
But Norma Aleandro is the star of that film, and she's a really terrific actress. And I started looking at her filmography, and I was reminded that she is in Cousins, the American remake of Cousin Cousine quite like.
Is probably that available?
It is available. About the only U.S. remake of a French comedy, I think, that is worth 2 cents. And it's directed by, of all people, Joel Schumacher. So this is a movie that should not be good, but it is quite entertaining, I think. It stars Ted Danson and Isabella Rossellini about two people who meet when they become cousins by marriage. And they embark on an affair, and it's a charming film. So Cousins is my DVD pick this week. And is it also not in print? Are you kidding me? Oh, wait. You know what? It's streaming on Amazon Video.
Okay.
So I'll link to that.
All right.
Oy. We are going to do an all letters.
Yeah, we were going to do it the minute you came back, but we haven't had time. So yeah. That's going to happen this week. I'm not going to do any letters today.
Oh, none? Really?
No. Okay. I'm still collecting them. There's a bunch.
Yeah.
This is going to be a pretty
lengthy
episode.
And there's even
episode.
A few more in like our inbox that I haven't sent you yet.
So, you know.
There's that to look forward to.
Indeed.
All right. So, you know, as always, first of all, I do not always remember to do this. So I want to thank Blue for our theme music.
Thanks, Blue. Our theme music
is great.
It is.
He has been doing a lot of fun stuff of late, new recordings. You should totally always go listen to what he's got to offer at blutopia.com, BLEUTOPIA.com. He's great. And then also, you know, check out our friends on the internet. Go to ChristyLemire.com. Listen to the B-Movies podcast with Bibbs and Whitney. Bibbs, thank you for sitting in for me last week while I was in Austin. I appreciate it.
And for singing.
You didn't, yes, you think, sang the theme song. You didn't burn the show down, so I appreciate that. The Schmoes Know, the Rotten Tomatoes podcast, Sewers of Paris, the Joel Ryan thing, the Bret Easton Ellis podcast. I should have this memorized by now. You would think. Fat Guys of the Movies, the Criterion Cast, Film Spotting, SVU, The Game Night Guys, and Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to the show for free at iTunes and do leave us a nice review. It's been a while since anyone has left us a review, and we would love to have some. It does help people find the show. It ties into that whole weird Apple algorithm thing.
Five stars only.
Four is okay, too.
If
you feel the need. Anyway, if you haven't reviewed us lately or ever, or if you haven't reviewed us ever, please go do that. That'd be great. You can stream this program at Stitcher Radio or TheLounge.com, and you can leave us positive feedback there as well. Follow our Facebook, like our Facebook page. That's how you can find out when we're going live and doing a live video.
We're not doing that anymore.
Oh, we are. We're just going to plan it better, but we're doing it more. Like our group page to talk about movies with other fans of the show. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at LinoleumCast. Drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. We are super going to dig into all of the letters we've not read yet on the show and do a whole episode devoted to them, which will be more entertaining than it sounds, I promise. Hey, go support our Patreon page. Become a member of our club.
$4.
Yeah, starting there.
$4 a month
gets
you LKTV.
Gets you LKTV. Now, if you are a $12 member, you get our monthly club meeting where we all watch a streaming movie together and we chat about it via Google Hangout. Our next club meeting is this Saturday night, starting at 6 p.m. Pacific time. And we will be going to Netflix to watch the super absurd faith-based Elvis impersonator movie, The Identical. I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and you will want to be around for that. So if you're not already a $12 member, maybe this is your inducement to become one. If you are a $12 member and you were not part of last month's club meeting, please drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com so we can add you to our Google Hangout list. And yeah, you guys are great. We really thank all of our Patreon supporters, and we thank everybody for listening to the show and for telling your friends about the show and for, you know, getting us to the dizzying heights that we have reached over the last 5+ years, and we're just going to...
We're super dizzy.
We're going to keep at it. All right, so until next time, goodbye.